Let's get started. Welcome to Blade and to our beautiful campus here in Redmond. I hope you guys are enjoying your sessions here. My name is Kiran. I am a dev, performance dev in Microsoft. Me and my team, we primarily focus on improving the performance of XAML platform. So in last 6 months or so, what we were focusing on were to investigate apps which were submitted to App Store. So we had two goals out of those. The number one was to go and find out what was what we could improve in the platform itself so that these apps are not not performing well, or they can be better when they're submitted. So we did take a lot of learnings out of those, and we put that into the platform, and we did make our platform better. And there are a few things still pending which we are going to do in our future releases. The most important thing was the second part of it, that is, we did go and analyze this app to figure out what were the patterns these apps were following and what was the things which they were doing and they were not supposed to do. When I mean they're not supposed to do means the things which they are doing and they did not know they were, those things could cost them performance. Because XAML is really a powerful platform, and anything, like, it's so powerful that if you don't build the application from ground up and you build a richest application, you will get into these problems, and you are not going to find out unless you are ready to load those applications to the store. So what I'm going to do today is basically talk about those pitfalls which you should avoid when you're writing XAML applications. So I have divided my talk into four categories there. So first, of course, I'm going to talk about performance. You guys are here, that definitely tells me that you are interested in performance and you do care about performance. But it's, you know, I still want to spend 5 minutes talking about that, and wants to share what we do here in Microsoft to make sure our platform is really a performant platform. And I'm going to give you a very very high-level overview of how XAML architecture is. The reason I want to do that is because I'm a strong believer of the thing that unless you understand what is going behind the scene, it's very difficult for you to make a call why I should do a certain things a certain way. So I do want to give, spend at least one or two slides talking about how this XAML platform goes and does the thing what it does today. And then I have a couple of slides talking about the problem areas and why those problem areas could cause problems in your applications. And then at the end, I do have some slides to talk about, or some demos to show you about the tools which you can use to diagnose this problem. So the three areas, the XAML architecture, tips, and the profiling, what I have done is I have mixed them together so that there's a nice flow, a story to tell about each problem. It starts with the problem. I talk about why and how the XAML platform, what the XAML platform does to cause that problem, and how you can use the tools to diagnose those problems, and then what you should avoid so that you don't get into those issues there. Okay, so why do we care? So why do you care about performance? You know, the performance is important. Why? Because if you think too much about the features of your application, if you think that the features are the thing which are selling your application, then I would say that's wrong. Because what sells your application is both, you know, the features, the richness of your application, and the performance of application. Nobody likes an application which starts up slower. Nobody likes to wait for seconds and seconds and seconds to see the first screen on this, on your screen. You know, everybody expects that you click on the tile, the application is up and running, your first screen is up and there, and it's giving you the information. Nobody likes to wait too long for an application to respond. Everybody expects that you touch a button, it clicks, it does the things. Nobody likes a sloppy animation. Nobody likes a jittery panning experience. They want a really nice and smooth experience. If you're playing a video, if you're a media content, and if you're charging your top dollars for your media content, you don't want your users to be in a situation where they are seeing these high-def videos with the AV sync problem, or they are seeing these high-def videos with the dropping frames. You don't want that. If you are that user, think about it. What do you want? You want, you're paying those top dollars. You want this nice, rich experience with those applications. So you don't want to be that app developer whose application is really nice, very rich, but it's not performing well. Nobody's going to install those applications. So you want to make sure that your application is top class. It's very nice. It has buttery smooth experience. Okay, so now I do understand the importance of performance. What do I do? So this is what we do normally in Microsoft. Your performance culture starts from understanding your scenarios. You need to understand what exactly you're targeting for, who your users are, what your user is going to do with your application. You need to have a very nice storyboard telling the story about your application, how it starts, how it performs, what is the next stage, what the user is going to get out of your application. Take an example. What is the very first thing your user is going to do with your application? He's going to touch the tile and launch the application. So your launching becomes an experience. Your activation becomes an experience. So list that down. What is the next thing he's going to do? He's going to play around with your controls. Your reaction times becomes an experience. If you have a grid view, he's going to touch and flick or pan. Your panning becomes an experience. He's going to zoom. Your zooming becomes an experience. Your application goes to the background and stays there, and PLM, you don't want the PLM to kill your application because you want a very fast reaction time, very fast relaunch time, a very fast activation time out of that, or the suspend resume time out of that. So that becomes your experience. So what I'm telling you here is, you go and list out all the experiences of your application which you are really interested in. Once you have that list, go prioritize those lists, because prioritized list will help you to focus where you really want to focus on. Once you have the prioritized list of applications, the next what you have to really target about or think about is where your application is running. At the end of the day, that is what matters. Because you as a developer may have a very, very powerful machine. You may have multi-core or 8-core machines with tons and tons of RAM and with very high powered. Maybe you may have a water cooling system in your graphics card running your applications. You will see your application performing really nice, running high def videos on them without dropping frames, no AV sync problems. But when those applications are uploaded to the store and are downloaded on your user machines or your customer's machine, how does that perform? He may not have the powerful machines like you. He's going to use the machines which he gets as a consumer hardware. Those may not have the power as what you're expecting. So make sure you have a list of hardware which you are thinking your user is going to use. Because at the end of the day, you want to have your application run on those hardwares. It's extremely important that you test. You test and test and test, measure and measure and measure on those hardware and not on the hardware on which you are developing your application. Because those are they could be the consumer hardware, but they could also be a very powerful machines. Make sure that you always have the hardware which your end user is going to use your application on. Okay, so now I understand why performance is important. I understand, what do I do? Now, how do I do it? So how do I do it where the culture comes into picture? You need to build your culture of performance from the day one. You need to make sure that the feature specs when you write, there is a performance section in your feature spec. Because every feature which you write for application maps to an experience. And without having a smooth flow of that story, you can't deliver your application. So make sure that your feature spec has a performance section. And in that performance section, you talk about your experience, you talk about your hardware, and you talk about your goal. The goal is always very tightly coupled with your metric. What are you going to, what is that you're going to measure? In each experience, you have to have a metric defined around that. Like, for example, activation. What is that you're measuring in the activation? Your startup time, your CPU, how fast it's going to come up. So that becomes your metric around that. So for each experience, for each feature, you have a section where you define your experience. And for each experience, you define the goal. And the goal is targeted towards your hardware which you're going to use. So once you have that in place, next step is to make sure that you make progress forward and try to have some gates which are going to prevent you from going backwards. That's what we call it as regression control. So make sure you have enough infrastructure there which are going to measure your experiences against your goals and metrics on the target hardware and give you a nice reporting structure for that. Make sure that your developers, if you have one dev, it's you. You make sure that you measure and measure and remeasure and go towards your goal. Always make sure that you have predefined budget for your features which are going in. Once you are equipped with all those things, I'm sure you will be in a position where you're not spending tons and tons of hours just before you're ready to upload your applications into the store. I've seen this a lot of times. Just a day before the application is ready to be uploaded to the store, the people come to me and say, hey, my app is not passing the store. What do I do? I said, well, you should have thought about that 2 months back when you tried to design your application. Now it's too late. Give me 2 more days and then we'll figure it out. Right? I don't want you guys to be in that situation. So make sure that you understand what your application is. Make sure you understand which hardware it's going to run on. Make sure you understand the experience. You have the goals. You have the target hardware. And you measure every time, every day, every week, and have that culture built into a system. Okay, so said that, let's now jump into how the XAML platform is built. So from the slide, you can see the XAML is really a layered platform. To start with, there's a very common question people normally ask me. Is XAML built with managed code? Absolutely not. The XAML is ground up built with native code. It's a C++ code running there. There is no managed code running. If you're writing a pure C++ XAML app, there is no managed code there. There is no CLR there. There is no GC there on anything. It's a pure C++ app. So XAML is ground up native code. There is no managed code involved in that. XAML has a layered architecture. At very top, you have your application calling the ABI layer. You can write your application in any language, C++, VB, or C Sharp. The Windows 8 provides a very nice layering of Finality APIs, which any language can call into. XAML exposes those Finality APIs so that any language can call into it. Then you have a core part of the XAML. The core part of the XAML is where your the layout system is running, your parser is running, your eventing is running, and your framework is running, your templating is running, your styling is running, your theming is running. And then at the bottom part, we have graphic system. The graphic system is where your primitives, which are the instruction sets which are created from your element tree, goes into the graphic system. Graphic system converts those primitives and composites the scene and pushes those D3D instructions into our D3D. So from this layer, you can see that we do use the primitives or the basic building blocks provided by the operating system. We do use D3D to composite our scenes. We do use D2D and D-Write to composite our text. We do use MPT to play our media playback. So that gives us an advantage of all the hardware support which the rich these subsystems are provided in the Windows 8 platform. XAML also takes advantage of multi-cores. We have multiple threads enabled. So if you have multi-core machines, these days most of the machines are multi-core. Even the consumer hardware, low-end hardware have multi-cores there. So we have multiple threads. So at very high level, we have two main threads, the UI thread and the compositor. I'll come to that later. We do create a lot of worker threads. If you have images and if you're using an image element and decoder, we do make sure that we spin up a separate thread to decode those images so that your UI thread and compositor is free to do something else. So we also spin up multiple threads to create rasterized images. If you have elements there which cannot be created in hardware, we go and create the rasterized bitmap for those elements. And again, those are in multiple threads based on how many cores you have. We do take advantage of that. So now let's come back to the two threads which you talked about. We have UI thread and we have a compositor. So what does UI thread does? The UI thread, as the name indicates, it's the thread which controls your UI. This is the thread where your eventing is running, the event loop is running. This is the thread where your input is handled. This is the thread where your mouse inputs, your keyboard inputs, and everything else is handled. This is the thread where your XAML is parsed. This is the thread where your elements are laid out. This is the thread where your primitives are created from those elements. Once the primitives are created, those primitives are pushed into the compositor. And compositor takes those primitives and creates the scene. It composites the scene. These two threads are running parallel to each other. So think about an animation which is driven through UI thread. I'll come back to the animation in my animation section, but just for you guys to understand, if the animation is running and the animation is controlled by UI thread, the UI thread is running in parallel to the compositor. The UI thread creates the animation primitives, pushes down to the compositor, and now the UI thread is free to execute the next frame. And compositor takes the previous frame and pushes those frames down to the graphics card, and the graphics card flips those images to the screen. So because of this multi-threaded architecture, we are able to reduce the frame time and give you a very nice, smooth, flowing animation. Because if you guys have dealt with animation, you should understand that if you want to have a really smooth animation, you need to hit at least 55 to 60 FPS on those animations. And to hit that, you have a really, really narrow budget under which you have to calculate everything. This is around 16 milliseconds. So if you are going to do everything in parallel, that is the creation of elements, the laying out of elements, the rendering of elements, the compositing of elements, then you are actually going beyond that limit, and you can miss the frame limit, and you may not be able to achieve that 60 FPS. So we do take off, because we have these two threads, we are able to take advantage of that, and we are able to reduce this these costs and can get to a particular frame rate or a frame budget and get a really nice animation flowing. So The other thing is the platform also works in frames. Just now, just a thing which I described to you. So each frame is on the UI thread and the compositor does things. These frames get initiated by user activity or through the animation or through something else. So when this frame is initiated, like for example, if you have an animation running, as I explained to you before, the frame starts from the UI thread. The UI thread sees that there is a timeline defined by the animation for which the animation has to change something on the screen. It goes and changes those things in the UI element, creates the primitive for those, pushes those things to the compositor. The compositor takes those, creates the instruction set for that, pushes down to the hardware. Now you have the frame limit in the UI thread and you have frame limit in the compositor. Because they are running in parallel, those things can be parallelized. And there's one more additional thing. When we are running animation, we do create a frame buffers of 3 frames. So you can get a really nice frame rate, even for some instances if you go beyond the frame limit. So when we are creating the swap chains for D3D devices, we make sure that we have 3 frame buffer time limit there so that the frames can be flipped and you can have a smooth animation even if you go beyond the frame limit for a couple of frames there. Okay, so let's go into the problem areas, the basic problems which you normally see in XAML when you write an application in XAML. So let's start with the startup experience or the activation experience. So before I go and talk about what you should avoid to get a nice startup or a time-limited startup, let's spend some time understanding what is happening behind the scene when the application starts up. So let's walk through the experience first. The user goes and touches the tile. The application launches. So what is happening behind the scene? User touches the tile. Application is launched. That's the process is created. Your main function starts. The very first thing happens here is application object is created. As part of that, application.xaml is parsed. When application.xaml is parsed, we go and look into all the other XAMLs which is referenced in that application.xaml. So everything which application.xaml refers, we go pull those XAMLs and we parse those. Once the application XAML and all the referenced XAMLs are parsed, we go and call onloaded. In the onloaded, you go create your main page. You say new main page. As part of that, we run the constructor of main page. In the constructor of main page, if you have gone and seen the code, you will see there's an initialize component. As part of initialize component, if you go and get into a debugger and see what's happening inside that, you will see that it goes and loads your main page.xaml. So you have another XAML there. And when we are parsing the main page.xaml, if there are any other XAML referenced in the main page.xaml, we go pull those XAMLs and we parse them. Once the XAML is parsed, during the parsing stage of XAML, we create those elements which you have defined in the XAML. So we have this element tree now. So once the element tree is created, you do window.content equal to that main page. So the main page gets attached to the window.content. Once the main page is attached to the window.content, we go and do the layout of this. So remember, all this thing is happening in your UI thread. The compositor thread in the parallel is starting up and initializing your hardware, creating your swap chains, creating your D3 devices and everything. Those things are happening in parallel. So once you're...
Sorry. What about generic.xaml?
Yes, I'll come to that. So that's a good question. The question was, what about generic.xaml? So I'll come to that. So once the once your tree is created, the element tree is created. Remember, when the element tree is created, it's only the elements are created. Like for example, button. The button is created, but the template of button is not expanded yet. So once this tree is attached to the window content, we run the layout. As part of layout is where we go start expanding this template. As part of expansion of template, we go figure out where these templates are. That's when we pull in the generic.xaml. So we do provide system provider generic.xaml, which defines the default templates for all our controls. So we have optimized the loading of generic.xaml. I'll show you when I show you the demo. That the generic.xaml, which is provided by the system, we don't load everything in the generic.xaml. We optimized it in such a way that we pull only the templates and the style which are used by the controls which you have used in your XAML. So we have done that optimization there. So if you have your own generic.xaml, we will pull that into. So once the layout is done, we run the rendering system in the UI thread. So the rendering code path, what it does is it goes Again, it goes through individual elements. Now it's not going at the button level, but it's going into the visual tree level for each of those elements. And it creates the primitives for those. Those primitives are created in batches, and then it's pushed down to the compositor. Once the primitives are pushed down to the compositor, your UI thread is free to do any other activities. So what this means? This means if you have taken too long in your UI thread, your UI is not responding because your UI thread is busy doing all those things. So you need to make sure that the time spent in your UI thread is as minimal as possible. Why? Because you want to make sure your UI can be responsive. So once the primitives are pushed into compositor, the compositor takes those primitives and creates your scene, composites your scene, and creates D3D instructions and pushes those things down to the hardware. Then the hardware goes and executes. Now you are paying the GPU cost. If you have too much of instruction pushed down, you're going to pay too much of GPU cost. The GPU is going to run, is going to flip the screen, scene into the screen. So this is what how it looks like end-to-end when you look from the click of the tile, the scene comes up. In this whole timeline, there is a time where your splash screen is going to be dismissed and your screen is going to come up. When is that? This is what exactly happens after you do window.content equals new main page. We go down and we say, oh, the main page is ready. We're not going to take too long to go run the layout, too long for our compositor to composite a scene. So we're going to run the layout and then we're going to say, okay, we are done. System, you can now dismiss your splash screen because we have the UI ready and your UI is going to come up on that. The system then brings down the splash screen, is going to bring up your window and your scene is going to be on that. So, as it's then written on the slide, the UI thread is responsible for parsing, layout, rendering, and app code. That is extremely important to understand. Because when you're running your layout, there are certain callbacks the XAML platform calls back to the user code. Like, for example, your loaded event. Or, for example, your measure override or arrange overrides. So those are all in your user code. So you want to make sure that as minimum code as possible you write for your startup code path. If you have any elements which are there in the main page, which happens to be in the startup code path, they are as small as possible so that you can fit in your budget of your startup time. Optimizing for startup. So from this, what we understand is we need to make sure, number one, we have less XAML as possible. So go and make an inventory of all the XAMLs which you're trying to touch during a startup code path and have a justification around that. Why is that you want those XAMLs? Is those XAMLs used in your first page? If they are not, then don't use it. Delay load them. Load it somewhere else. Number two, do less work in your UI thread. If a callback is given to you, don't do a synchronous web request and try to wait for that. You're not going to get your startup on time. So make sure you have a very optimized web request around those. If your data is coming from cloud and if data is not available, make sure you have some kind of perceived experience to the user so that the user is not sitting there and waiting for the application to come up. Make use of UI virtualization. If you have a grid view or a list view, and if it has got thousands and thousands of elements, make sure you are virtualizing it. Why? If you're not virtualizing it, all those elements which are there in the grid view, we assume that you're going to use it and we're going to realize it. So your XAML is going to be really, really large, and you're going to spend a lot of time parsing those XAMLs. So make sure you take advantage of the UI virtualization. The layout and the rendering code path in the UI system completely depends on how many elements you have in the tree because it's a tree walk. So you make sure that you have as less number of elements as possible in your scene, especially in the startup code path. If you take care of all those things, I'm sure your startup will be much faster. It's not going to spend 5 seconds to bring up on your consumer hardware machines. So said that, I want to show you and I want to introduce you to the tool which will help you diagnose a startup problem, specifically to look at the XAMLs because that is the important thing when you're running the startup because XAML is what we are parsing. XAML is what defines your element count. XAML is what defines whether you're virtualized or not. So I'll show you a tool which you can use to see how to figure out what my startup time is and in that startup time, how to figure out which XAMLs did I touch and how did I pull that out? So if you have done performance analysis before, I'm sure you're aware of XPerf. So XPerf is a tool which we ship from long time as part of Windows now. We have also shipped a tool, a WPA, which comes as part, which is not as in the Windows 8, but you can download it as part of Windows Assessment Kit. And the WPA is basically a visualizer for your XPerf logs. So XPerf is a tool which will help you capture the ETW events. So XAML platform has got tons of ETW events spread across. So when you're running, when you turn on the provider for XAML, you will have a lot of information there. And you can use a WPA to understand those information. It's not only the XAML platform. In fact, a lot of subsystems in the platform or in Windows 8 do spit ETW events. So there's a lot of information there in WPA. So I'm not going to go and talk about the details of WPA because that's a separate talk and it takes another hour or 2 hours to go and explain how the WPA works. And there's a lot of documentation around WPA. You can go online in MSDN and read about it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how to fish the XAML problems in this WPA. Okay, so what I've done is to ease my job, just for the presentation, I have created a batch file. So this is the batch file which shows you how to turn on certain events for the system. So there are two providers which you are very much interested in here. One is the system, which is the kernel provider, and the other one is your XAML provider. So if you look at this batch file, the very first thing which I'm trying to do here, after a couple of lines, the first couple of lines, I'm just setting certain variables there. But this is the important section of it. So you can see I'm turning on the kernel provider and a XAML provider. It does have options to provide in if you want any additional providers which can be passed in through a command line to this batch file. So the bottom line is I'm trying to turn on the kernel provider and the XAML provider. After that, I'm going to start the begin tracing, and I'm going to listen for those, wait for the application to launch, and then I'm going to close the application. Then I'm going to end the tracing. Once the tracing is end, it's going to generate certain ETL files. I'm going to use those ETL files, and I'm going to merge those ETL files into XAML merge ETL files. So I'm going to share this command file also along with my sample code here, so which you can use in your application debugging. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start this. I'm going to say capture. So it has started all the providers for me. I'm going to go to my application and start my application. This is my application. It's a very simple application. I'm going to close it. So there's a tool, WPA. If you install a Windows Assessment Kit, WPA comes comes as part of it. You use the WPA and then pass in the merged ETL file to it. Again, I want to remind you, the WPA is a very powerful tool. There's lots and lots of information on the same screen. You can fish around. You can get all the information regarding the system into this. But for this presentation, what we are going to focus on is how to go and figure out what happened in the startup code path of the XAML application. So let's go to the graphical view. In this, under the system activity, you can see a generic event. This is where all the events are listed. So you go to a generic event. Go to the details of it. Now, the two providers which you are interested in are the XAML provider and shell provider. The shell provider is going to tell you when your application started and showed its screen. So if you see in this one, you don't see anything. Why? Because my application was already running. It is showing me that you came up from a resume. So my application was in the background, it's from a suspended stage, and came back in the resume. So this is how you look at if your application is suspended and if you're resuming out of it, what is going on that. So what I will do is I'll go back and see if my application... Okay, so this was a startup. So let me kill the application. Same thing, system activity, go to your generic event, pull it out, immersive, and there you go. This is the event which you are interested in. This tells you when application started and when the splash screen was dismissed. So you take this, and when you clicked on this, you see the region was selected. So this is the region which you are interested in. You right click and say zoom. So you zoom into the selection. Once you have zoomed into this, now you are going to look into the XAML events which have happened in this this particular window. This is the XAML provider. You click on it, all the XAML events are here. There's tons and tons of XAML events there. So what are you fishing on? You're fishing for XAML parsing, because that is what is directly linked to your startup problem. So let's go and look into the XAML load XAML event. So if you scroll down, or the parse XAML event. So this is the event which tells you that what which XAMLs were parsed and how much time did it take. So this, if you expand this, you can see there's a start, stop, and info. So you look at the start, again expand this. And these are the XAMLs which you have. Look at this. These were the XAMLs which were parsed during your startup time. So now what you have to do is you need to make sure that you have justification for each and every XAML there. If there is any XAML which you see is not supposed to be there during your startup, go back to your code and see what is happening, why those XAMLs are loaded. For my sample, if I look at this, app bar and list style, I know I'm not showing an app bar when my application is startup. Why do I have that XAML there? I'm sure that I don't have any list views in my startup screen of my application. Then why do I have those XAMLs? So I will go back to my code and see where those XAMLs were pulled in. So we'll do that in a while. But before that, you see all this generic.xaml here. This is what I was talking about. So we don't pull the generic.xaml in one shot. We go and pull it, and we just parse the piece which we want. And that's exactly which you are seeing here. The number of times this was touched tells you how many controls you had. How many templates did we have to pull that out of this XAML. So if I go and show you the code here, and as I was telling, the very first thing is the application.xaml and mainpage.xaml. Those are the only two XAMLs you should be aware of. And let's go and look into those two XAMLs and see what we did wrong. So this is my application.xaml. I have a resource dictionary in that, and it is loading three other XAMLs. So that was my problem. So I can go and comment these two things, and I run this app again, and I go and analyze this WPA on those. I can very clearly see that those XAMLs are not there. I can show you how the time goes down from certain milliseconds or certain milliseconds. So what I will do here is, because my laptop is a really powerful laptop, so you may not see the difference here. So I have already captured two logs, before and after, which have the difference of only those three XAMLs on a consumer and hardware, and I'll show you how the difference looks like. So this is the before log. Again, the same thing. Go to system activity, go to your generic event, go back, you can see it's the same XAMLs which we just saw for the application which we launched. One more interesting thing you will see is this. This is where your startup time is. This is what that window was which you selected, 1.4 seconds. So with all those XAMLs, it took 1.4 seconds for the application to launch. So let me show you another log which was taken after fixing those two lines of code. If you see here, you won't see those two XAMLs. That was the app bar and the list view. I removed those XAMLs and reran this tool to see how much did we improve. So you don't see those two XAMLs and see the startup time there. It went down from 1.4 seconds to 955 milliseconds. So that's what I was talking about. So if you have more XAMLs in your startup, you're paying the cost which you don't really want to pay. So make sure you have very less number of XAMLs. Why am I stressing so much into XAML? Because XAML is what defines your elements. That's what defines your parsing time. That's what defines your layout time. That's what defines your primitive creation time. That's what defines how much time the compositor and GPU is going to spend to create that scene. So make sure that you have a very good understanding of what it is. So I'm going to quickly show you another event which is very interesting here, which is going to help you when you're going and analyzing. You're going and analyzing whether your application is virtualized or not. How do you know whether your list view or grid view is virtualized or not? So again, the same thing. You go to system activity, you pull on your generic event. So in this case, I am going to zoom into the same startup code to see how much element did I create. So I go to XAML event. So there is an element created. So I have 233 elements created in my startup code path. So if you are going to profile a virtualization, if you're going to profile a navigation, which is navigating into another page which has a grid view or a list view, and you want to know whether those grid view or list view was virtualized or not, you just go to that frame and see how many element counts were there. If element counts were like, you know, in thousands and thousands, then you know that your scene was not virtualized. And if it is within a couple of limits, like, you know, 100 or 200, which you think should be the cost of your items in your list view, then it shows that it's virtualized or not virtualized. Okay, so we spent a lot of time talking about startup. So these are the events. I don't want to go into this again because you just saw that in the demo. So you start with the app shown, and then you drill into these events to look into what happened in your startup code path. Okay. Next, let's talk about the animation. So XAML supports two kinds of animation, dependent animation and independent animation. So here's where the thing becomes a little tricky. What is a dependent animation? So dependent animation is an animation where the UI thread is controlling your animation frames, either through an app code or through an animation system. What I mean by the app code is, like, if you're trying to write a game where you're trying to move the objects around, and you want a smooth movement of those objects. So what you do is you hook up into a render callback or a timer, and then in that timer you go and change the position of those elements. So what is happening is the animation of animation which is controlled by you, it's not a platform-driven animation, but a user code-driven animation, is running. The loop is running in a UI thread. And compositor is just taking the new batches from the UI thread and compositing that scene. So that is what I mean by the dependent animation. So dependent animation is UI thread heavy as well as the compositor heavy. So you want to make sure you avoid the dependent animation as much as possible. What is happening in the independent animation? In independent animation, you take the full advantage of the system. You tell the system that these are the animations which I want to run. And we have done a lot of work in the platform to make sure that most of our animations, they run independently, not dependently. So once you define your animations, the UI thread at very first frame creates the animation tree with the primitives and pushes those primitives into the compositor. After that, UI thread is free. It's free to do your other work. It's free to do your inputs. It's free to do your app code. And the compositor independently goes and runs those animation and creates a smooth flow of your animation system or animating objects. So to make an animation smooth, what all things you want to know? You want to make sure your animations are independent. You want to make sure your UI thread is as free as possible. So make your animations independent. Make sure if you are not using an animation, you stop that animation or remove the animation from the tree, because the platform doesn't know what you're going to do with those animations. It's very, very important for a scenario where you don't have anything on the screen other than readings. Like if you are a app, like a reader app, and you want that reader app to be able to run for quite a while without draining the battery, you want to make sure that your animations are not running. Because for those kind of apps, we want to make sure that our compositor and UI thread is not running. Why? Everything is on the screen. It's a reader app. All the text are on the screen. We don't want to do any work behind the scene to drain the battery. So it's very important that there's no animation running. If you have any animation which is not visible on the screen, don't run them. Because if you have an animation, if it is running, We don't know. We are going to tick our UI thread or the compositor based on the what animation is running. So if you have an animation and it's not on the screen, make sure it is stopped or removed from the animation tree. Don't use an infinite animation. Why? The infinite animation, again, just like the animation which is not seen on the screen, is in the background thread. We don't know what is going on in that. We have to run those animations. We have to walk the animation tree. We have to recreate those scenes. So try to avoid those kind of things. How do you get a smooth animation? If you have an independent animation and it's running in the compositor, what is the other thing which is going to affect the animation frame rate or is going to cross the frame budget? Only one thing, the overdraw. Make sure that the number of instructions which the compositor is going to create for those animations are as small as possible. More number of instructions, more heavy weight to those graphics cards to create your animation or you create your scenes. So make sure whatever you push down to your compositor can be achieved in your frame limit of 16 milliseconds. The ARM hardwares, the ARM hardwares which are available today in a consumer market have a capability of producing 2 to 3 screen worth of overdraws. What that means is, in a particular frame, because if you want to meet a frame budget, that is 16 milliseconds, you want to make sure your GPU does not go beyond 10 to 12 milliseconds, because you need the other time for your other threads to do activity to push those instructions down to the GPU. So these ARM hardwares have a capacity to fill 2 to 3 screen worth of data. If you have more than that, it's going to start missing that frame rate. It's going to start missing those frame budgets. So make sure whatever instruction you're going to push down or whatever element tree you're going to create for your animation fits in that budget. So that's what we have for animation. So make sure that you have independent animation used as much as possible. Make sure your UI thread is free to do other activities and not running this animation loop. So I'm going to show some tools how to diagnose the animation problem after the panning, after talking about panning, because panning and animation, they go hand in hand. So let's talk about panning. What happens during panning? From the experience point of view, if you have a grid view, you touch the grid view, you pan. You touch the grid view, you flick or you zoom. So you want to make sure when you're panning or flicking, your items in the grid view or list view are very smooth. They very smoothly come into the scene or go out of the scene. So at very high level, we see two kind of issues in panning. And sometimes it's a combination of both. It's very interesting because once you understand those issues and once you understand what is happening behind the scene, it will be very easy for you to diagnose and fix those issues. So number one is you touch and you flick, you see a very smooth movement in the scene, but you see blank. The UI objects are not there. Then they pop up. Very bad experience. You don't want that. Again, let me repeat that. You touch and you flick. It's a very smooth movement, but the UI elements are popping up. The number two problem. You touch and you flick. It's a very jittery movement. UI elements are there, but the movement is very jittery. You feel like, what's happening? Why is it so slow? Why is it dropping frames? So these are two different problems. The symptoms are different, the solution are different, and the cause is different. So let me talk what is happening behind the scene when you see those problems. So let's talk about panning. So when you touch the screen, the very first thing the platform gets is a pointer down message. So we get that message in our UI thread. So UI thread receives that message. It walks the UI tree to figure out which element was touched, if that was inside a scrollable area or a panable area. So very first thing we do is to figure out whether it was touched inside the panning area. If it was, then we go and initialize the direct manipulation engine, the engine which takes care of your gesture recognition, the engine which takes care of independent input. So once that engine is initialized, all the input is redirected to that. No input comes into a UI thread. UI thread is not getting any input at that time. All the input is going into your direct manipulation. So direct manipulation after that is going to calculate what is happening on the screen. If you have two fingers, it's going to calculate what gesture that fingers are doing. If you have one finger, you're panning, it's going to figure out whether it's a panning or it's a tearing. So that is what the direct manipulation engine does. So once it figures that out, it then goes and broadcasts that messages to interested parties. So in our case, the UI thread and the compositor are the two guys who are listening to those. The compositor goes and pulls this information from the direct manipulation about the position of the finger, because it has to move the scene. The scene which is there on the screen is already been cached. The compositor has already composited that scene. So once you, when you touch and when you move, when you're moving, the compositor is asking the direct manipulation for the new position of your finger, and based on that, it calculates the transform, applies the transform, and moves that rectangle. So the moving of the rectangle is the responsibility of the compositor thread. If your content is virtualized, think about it. If your content is virtualized, you don't have everything realized. You have only cached elements realized. If you have a grid view which is virtualized, we make sure that we have two columns this side and two columns this side which are cached, which are realized. Everything else is not realized. So when you're panning, we have to bring those non-realized element into realized stage and cache this non-cached area. So again, let's go back to our experience here. You touch and you pan. We talked about the compositor. Compositor is only moving the rectangle. So what is UI thread doing? UI thread gets the new coordinates and it goes and calculates what needs to be brought into the scene. Because when the compositor has moved, it has moved the cached element into your scene, the cache is empty. The UI thread goes and creates those elements, creates those data, it expands those data templates and creates those elementary, those items, those grid view items, and tries to fill in those cache, pushes those instructions down to the compositor. So compositor is doing two things now. It is creating the new hardware instructions to fill in the cache, also moving that scene. UI thread is filling in this cache. Let's go back to the problem. The first problem, you touched and you flicked. Everything is very smooth, but UI is not there. So what is the problem there? Your UI thread is not able to bring in the content because your UI thread is very busy. Why it could be busy? It could be because you have a user code there running in listening to those pointer messages and doing something. Or your items or your data template inside your grid view items are very expensive to create. Or you may not have data from the cloud. You're trying to still fetch the data from the cloud. These three things or four things can happen. But the key point is, if you touch and flick, if it is very smooth movement and you have UI elements popping up, the problem is that your UI thread is not popping up. You need to go and figure out what is happening in the scene which is causing that to happen. The second problem, if you touch, flick, and if you have a jittery movement, it's the compositor. Your compositor is not able to maintain your frame budget. It's running out of your frame budget. It's not able to render those things within your 16 milliseconds. It's taking more than that. It's not hitting that 60 FPS. Why? Again, it's the primitives. If you have a lot of primitives, if you have a lot of overdraw, going back to my previous slide, if you have a lot of overdraws on your screen, if you have more than three screen worth of data which is going in, it's going to miss your frame. Because it's not only the compositor, it's the compositor, your GPU, and your screen flipping activity, what is happening. So you want to make sure that everything together has to fit that 16 FPS, 16 millisecond frame budget. So in this slide, I'm talking about whatever I just talked a few minutes back. The jittery movement, the interaction, why the jittery movement happens, it's because your UI thread is busy doing certain activities. You're a scroll viewer and only make sure that your scroll viewer, if you have anything in the scroll viewer using mouse, it's going to be in the UI thread. You want to make, because the way how it is architected today, the touch is the only thing which goes into independent movement. If you are using a mouse, it is not independent. So mapping that back to an experience, if you have a grid view, if you use touch and flick, direct manipulation takes care of it. Compositor is independently moving the scene. But if you use the mouse and scroll, because the mouse messages are still coming in on the UI thread and the direct manipulation does not understand the mouse messages, the UI thread is busy moving the scene out. So touch will be much better than your mouse activities. GPU overdraw is another problem for your compositor. If you have a lot of GPU overdraw, if you have more than three screen worth of data on your scene, you will have a problem. So going back to the tools, how are you going to diagnose this? So the key issues which we talked about was how many elements do you have? We already talked about how we are going to use the WPA to figure out how many elements you're bringing in. What you have to do is you need to just make sure that you capture the events when you're flicking and open the WPA and see how many element counts you have. If you have too many element counts, then that is the problem why the UI thread is busy creating those elements. You need to make sure that your element counts are smaller. Number two, you need to make sure that your data is available. If your data is not available, you need to have some some perceived experience. It could be based on a placeholder. So you can provide a placeholder for your UI. Because black screen when you're panning is bad. But if you have a gray boxes, it still gives you a better experience. It gives you gives the user an impression that, oh, okay, data is still getting downloaded from the web. So I can wait. Let me wait for another second or so and the data is going to pop up. So it's always about perceived experience. If you can't meet the budget of the frame, make sure your perceived experience at least meets those budget. The second problem which we talked about was the overdraw. So I'm going to show you the tools which you can use to see how much overdraw you are doing on the scene. And based on that, you can go back to your XAML. You can update your XAML to reduce those overdraws. So we talked about the animation and we talked about the panning. In animation, we talked about how to figure out whether an animation is independent or dependent, because you want to make sure all your animations are independent. So I'm going to show you a tool which will show you whether your animation is running dependent or independent. And both animation and panning, if you want to have smooth animation and smooth panning, you want to reduce your overdraw. I'm going to show you a tool which will show you what overdraw and what region of your UI you have a lot of overdraws. So based on with the power of those two tools, you can very easily make your animation smooth and your panning smooth. So we have debug settings already today, and you can use these debug settings to enable the overdraw or the frame rate counter. So let's go look at the frame rate counter, because that's what we talked about in the animation. So when I enable this, on the left side corner on the top of my scene or of my screen, I'm going to see a lot of counters there. The most important of those are two, the UI thread frame rate and the compositor frame rate. So if you're running an animation, and if your UI thread is ticking, and if your UI thread is consuming a lot of activities or CPU, or if your UI thread frame rate is more than 20 or 30, that should give you an indication that that animation is not independent. So you have to go back and look into your animation code and see how to make those animations independent. So let's look into the sample here. There's no animation on this, so you're not seeing anything on those counters. So let me go and click on the dependent animation thing. So what is happening here now? You can see the first counter is 000. That is where we show the compositor frame rate. So your compositor is not doing any activity in this. Your second counter there is your UI thread frame rate. It is pretty happy. It is running very nice. But you don't want to be in that situation. You want your compositor to be taking care of your animation and UI thread to be free. So this is how you can figure out whether you have an animation running dependent or independent. So let me show you the code where I'm using these animations, which are dependent animations. So what I'm doing here, I have a text block. I'm changing the position of the text block, also the size, the font size of the text block. Bad. You should not change the font size, or you should not animate the font size. If you animate the font size, that animation is dependent animation. It's not an independent animation. So think from this perspective. Any animation which needs to relay out the scene or recalculation of your glyphs are going to be dependent animations. Any animation which does not change any layout in the scene, but the positions, that can be independent animation. So let's change this animation to an independent animation and see how the counters look like. I have to do only a few changes in this. One, I should make sure that I am not animating the font size. Rather, I am applying the scale transforms to those text blocks, and we'll take care of that. So the fixed code for this will look something like this. So I changed the animation type from font size to a scale. So I'm not changing the font anymore. I'm not animating the font size anymore. I'm animating the scale of, I'm applying a transform on the scale, scale transform on that, and my compositor can take care of running those animations. So let's run this application again and go back and see how my independent animation looks like. So you can, from the visually also, you can see it's much smoother than how my dependent animation were. And my counters are completely different now. I have the compositor running at 60 FPS, and UI3D is not doing anything. It's just running at 11 FPS, because this is where we go and figure out what the new coordinate position for those elements are. So this is where you want to be. If you have an animation, make sure those animations are running independently rather than dependently. So once you figure out about the animation, the next thing to smooth out your animation is the overdraw. And that also helps your...
There's also a property on there for dependent animation. What was that for?
So that's, the question was, there was a property on that for the dependent animation. So you could override the system, and you can make certain animation dependent if you want, which we highly encourage not to do that. So what we have done is, in the system, we try to make sure that all your animations are independent animation. So if you try to do any animation which system cannot support as an independent, we error out. So you have to explicitly set that property that, yep, I am aware of this and I am going to run this as a dependent. And that's what that property is for. If I remove that property, animation is not going to run. Okay, so let me show you how the scene looks like. So this, I'll show you how to turn on the GPU overdraw. This is how it looks like, the landing screen for you. You have a background, which is same color. Then you have an item, which has got an image. And then you have a rectangle with black. And you have text. And you have some text, text again. So let's turn on the overdraw heat map on this, and then see how this scene looks like. There you go. So what this is showing is, the more deeper the color is, more the overdraw you have. So you can see at the very top you have white, then you have small red, then you have darker red, and then the darkness of red keeps on increasing. So this shows you that how much overdraw at a particular point you have. At this point, you have the most overdraw in the scene. So you want to make sure that you don't want to have this many overdraws. If you have went back and looked at the scene, how it looked like, this is how it was. Why do I have so many overdraws? Because if you really think about that, how many layers will I have? I have one layer, two, and that's it. I should not have more than that. And maybe the third one here. But I should be able to clip this in such a way that there's no overdraw in this. But if you go back and see how many overdraws you have. So this is what you want to make sure you fix. So if you go back to the code and look at it, so this is the data template for the grid view item. So in this, you can see that I have a border, and then I have an image. And border has a background, and image is stretched to the border. That itself is an overdraw for you. So you can figure out how many overdraws from your template and that tool. So once we fix this, this is how it looks like. Once you go and change and fix those overdraws, your scene should look like this. And the visual appearance of the scene will not change. It's that just that you reduced your overdraw and you reduced your GPU and compositor budget. And you can fit into your frame rate budget on that. So let me go back. Comment this out. And I'll show you how the scene looks like. There's no difference. Visually, there's no difference. The previous one was really doing a lot of activity, which was causing the GPU to stress down. So if you see an animation glitches or the panning glitches, then you have to go make sure that you're reducing your overdraw, the element counts, to make sure it can fit in your GPU or CPU budget.
Show that again.
The overdraw?
Yeah. What was it that you changed?
Okay. See here. This is the fixed one. So if you see, I have only image here. When you go back here, you see I have a border here. So border had a background, and then image was stretched to that border. So you have overdraw of 2 pixels there. So same pixel was drawn twice on the same place. So it's an example of overdraw. Which one? No, I didn't. Sorry, the question was how did I clip this? No, I did not clip this. I just removed the, if you see here, I just changed this. I removed the grid out of it so that the grid is no longer there because I was stretching that image to the whole rectangle. So I still have that there. And then you have this rectangle which is sized to that width to fill that there. And then I had text blocks on top of it. So image was on top of rectangle and rectangle was below that. Before, the image was behind that rectangle. So size of the image and the size of this rectangle was adjusted there. So question was the image behind the rectangle? That is correct. So the overdraw was you had a background in the grid, then you had image which was full of that rectangle, and then you had a black rectangle on top of it. So you had at the back rectangle, you had 3 times overdraw there. So you size the image, you size the rectangle, and you remove the background. So this is the recap of what we have in the counter and the debug settings what we use for the animation. This for the panning, the debug settings for the panning. Games.
Question.
I think I'm running out of time here. Yes.
So if you can clip the images beforehand, then there will be even less overdraw, right?
The question was if you clip the image beforehand. So do you mean clipping the image at the source itself?
Yeah, so you would have the
yes.
image at the bottom, you have the black.
That's correct. That's correct. So what you're saying is when you're creating those images, you're creating to that size. Yes. Then it's going to be much, it's not going to be less overdraw, it's going to be less work on our side. Because we don't have to stretch them or reduce them. That's correct. Optimize for games. So I want to be very honest here. XAML platform is not built for writing serious games. You have other platforms. We provide a lot of other platforms in Windows 8 which you can use to write really serious, rich games. The XAML platform is a UI platform. So we do provide support where you can mix those two platforms together. The Swapchain background panel is one of those. So you can use D3D to create your scene inside the Swapchain background panel, and you can have UI element as child of the Swapchain background, and which can go on top of this game. There are a couple of things you need to understand when you're using a Swapchain background panel. Because when we are using Swapchain background panel, we do internally in the system optimize certain number of elements as a direct child of Swapchain background panel. It goes back to the overdraw. Because we don't know how many and which and what area of the screen you are using your UI element on. So by default, an unoptimized version of this would be 2 screen worth of data. 1 screen for your game, which is Swapchain background panel, and 1 whole screen to accommodate your UI. So you are overdrawing for 2 screen. But we did some optimization in the platform to make sure that up to certain elements as a direct children of Swapchain background panel, we create only those elements as the visual elements and push those things down to the hardware. We use decomp or direct composition for that. So make sure that you don't have more than 6 to 8 direct childrens of Swapchain background panel. If you have under 8 childrens, which are directly under the Swapchain background panel, we make sure that we create individual decomp nodes for those. And when the compositor or the decomp compositor is compositing your game with the UI element, it's not going to pay the full screen, twice the full screen worth of overdraw. It's going to optimize that. But if we have more than that children's, then we say, oops, we can't do anything. We're going to flip to 2 screen worth of data, and then you're going to have 2 screen there. Number 2, make sure that your UI thread is free. Don't do your really expensive D3D operations in your UI thread. Keep it free. Take that, push it to a background thread, do all your drawing activity there, push those things into your swap chain, and then come back to UI thread saying that, yep, I'm dirty, go create your screen. Media, very interesting topic. This we have seen a lot lately. the two very important things for media is the flawless playback and the battery life. When we are playing media, the XAML platform is very optimized to play a full screen media. So if you have a full screen media with no overlay, no closed captioning, that is the ultimate experience you're going to have. There won't be any drops, and you will get a really nice battery life out of your devices. So if you don't need anything on the screen other than media, try to remove them. Full screen is always best. There's also a problem with the full screen. How do you get in full screen? Lately, we have seen a lot of issues with this, and we are fixing that in our future release. But for now, what you have to do is you have to make sure that you're stretching your media element to windows.current.bond. If you don't use that, then we are not going. You may perceive it to be running in full screen, but you are not running in full screen. And when you are not running in full screen, the platform doesn't know what else can be on top of the media. So we will go and create, again, 2 screen worth of data to composite. And you're going to pay the cost of CPU, GPU, and your composition. So you are going to drain your battery. So make sure that if you're running full screen, there's no elements on it. If you're not going to use the media element to play the media, when you're using the media element, do create or do use the poster source property on that. The reason is, if you don't use the poster source, we assume that you're going to use your media element and you're going to create all the needed resources for that media element. And good example of that is, if you want media elements in your grid view, you will have tons and tons and tons of media elements in your grid view, and we don't know how many of them you're going to use. We are going to use resources for individual of those. So that's pretty bad. We are going to consume a lot of system resources out of that. So to avoid that situation, make sure that you use the poster source. When you use the poster source, we know that you are not going to use that media element immediately. So we are going to delay the creation of resources on those. When you play, that's when we are going to create it. We delay load the creation of all the resources which are needed for the media element. The memory is another important topic, because memory is what defines how your application is going to react for suspend resume. Because PLM is very, very sensitive about memory. When the PLM goes and sees that the system is running out of memory, it goes and looks at the applications which are at the suspended state and has a lot of memory consumed. So it goes and starts killing those applications. So if your experience requires that your resume time to be way snappy, so make sure that you're going to release those resources. Make sure that your working set or reference set for that app is pretty small. There are a lot of things you can do. You can make sure that your element, again, it goes back to your element and richness of element. Make sure you have less number of elements when you go to suspend state. Try to release all those things. Make sure that your images are decoded to the size which you're going to show on the screen, not to its full size. That's extremely important, because if you don't, then if you have a 5 meg size of image, we are going to use that much size on the disk to decode those images. So make sure that you are decoding your images to the size which is going to be on the screen, not to the size or not to its native size. So said that, that was my last slide of this. We have a couple of other related talks around the XAML, which talks about the XAML platform itself. And there are also talks around performance for D3D games. If you're really a serious gamer, then you should go and sit in those talks, and you will get a lot of tons of information on how to optimize your application for D3D and C++. And we have talks around XAML list controls and grid view controls and those kind of things, so you can also go and sit on those. There are a lot of information available in the web. Everything what I talked about is there in a white paper. You can go and read that white paper, and you can get those information from there. WPA is a public tool. There's a lot of information about the WPA. Xperf is a public tool. There's a lot of information about information available for Xperf. You can go and see those. So in the white paper, you will see a lot of other topics too, which I was not able to cover in this because this was a limited time of 60 minutes. The performance is a topic where I can keep on going for hours and hours. It will never end. And the tools are the other thing. The performance tools are very, very, I really love performance, and I really love those tools. Those are my bread and butter I spend all my day dealing with those tools. So I will highly encourage, go and look into those tools. There's a lot of information in the web about WPA. WPA, Xperf, and the debug settings are your tools to go optimize this app. So I will be here. I'll be outside. Please stop by if you have any questions. I can definitely help you answering your questions. And if you have anything, please go ahead. I can spend 5 more minutes if you have any questions. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate that.